A Thousand Lives Lived podcast. The podcast where a thousand lives come to life. Where mysterious creatures take flight. Where the blind lead and where space is transversible. A place where the imagination is unleashed. Anything can happen. Hi, friends, and welcome to the show. I'm Hazel Danes, and today we will be joined by Tamara Lindsay.
Hello.
And we're just going to start our newest podcast series,
World Building, the Writer's Amusement Park.
So this episode, we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of world building. We're going to head right into that topic, but just for now, we're going to go and talk about our rabbit holes for this week.
Falling down the rabbit hole again.
So, Tamara, tell me about your rabbit hole.
I have been way into series that have sci-fi or mystery series that are from other countries. So there's two series I've been watching. One is called Beforeigners. It's from Norway, and it talks very much about immigration, but the immigrants are from a different time period. So there's a prehistoric caveman time period, there's Victorian time period, and there's Viking time period, and they all come to the present day. And this show is very much about the it never goes where you expect it to. It's always surprising. And the two main characters are detectives, one who's a present day person and one who's a Viking woman, who are investigating a murder. Anyway, there's that one. And then there's also another crime drama out of New Zealand called The Gulf, which is really, really good, which I'm really enjoying. Those are my rabbit holes.
Yeah, you'll have to send me the one about the Vikings.
I will.
That sounds interesting.
What is your rabbit hole?
So usually my rabbit holes are about like random research that I'm doing. That's usually not for an actual reason, just for pleasure. I am that type of weird person. I just like to go on Wikipedia and I follow the hyperlinks, and I could do that for like hours and hours. So right now I have a client who's writing a book in the Mayan period, which gets me very interested. I mean, I'm already interested in the Mayans, but I have to do research for it or else I can't edit it, right? So yeah, I've been kind of looking at like the archaeological finds and that sort of stuff for the Mayan period. And especially it's about a girl who tries to resist being captured to be sacrificed. So, I mean, that's a pretty...
As you do.
Yeah, that's quite an epic sort of plot line, right? So,
yes.
So that's exciting and fun. And yeah, that's been my rabbit hole for the last week. Let's get right into our topic for today. We are talking about world building. So if you're a writer, you know that when you start to write your book, you have to world build. Now, usually we associate this with things like sci-fi, fantasy, you know, like Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. But actually, like we're going to say on this episode, you have to world build like no matter what you are writing about, especially fiction, even nonfiction, because unless you are the actual person in the book, you are talking about somebody else's world. You can't really know everything. You've got to build some things to it. So we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of world building. So Tamara, you lead us off on what are some do's to do with world building?
Well, as you were saying, we have to world build no matter what we're writing. I mean, I write sci-fi, but I also write literary fiction. And your world building, even though you take for granted that you're writing your own world and it's easier, you don't have to do as much research, you're building, creating a world for your reader. So there's the world building that's within yourself that you're creating, sometimes consciously with sci-fi or history, but also there's the world you're presenting to your audience. And it's interesting because when you're writing something, it's what you're paying attention to. So when you're leading your reader's attention, you're saying, pay attention to this, don't even think about them, you know, going to the bathroom or whatever. You know, if it's a kid's book, you're not talking about sex, but if you're doing an adult book, you might talk about sex. So you're leading a person's attention. And that's kind of the basis of genre, if you think about it. Romance, you're talking very much about relationships. You may also have some other stuff in there. I mean, you may be a fantasy, you may be whatever, but you're leading your reader's attention. If you're doing a present day, you're leading their attention, you know, in the present day. And so I find that a really useful tool to look at things. Mm-hmm. How do you look at the different genres?
I think I like what you were saying about that you're leading their attention, kind of like you are walking around with the camera in your hand, right? Yeah. And you're showing things that are specific to themes that are in your story. And you're trying to take their attention away from things that aren't necessary, or else our books would be very long and confusing. So I think that means when you're world building, one thing you should do is to know exactly what your story is about and what it's not about, right? And to do that, you need to know a lot about your character. So I think that's the first thing that you think of in world building. You think of building your character. Who are they? What do they look like? What do they act like? What do they want? What do they need? And who do they like and not like? And like, there's just about 100,000 questions you could ask about a human that you're creating, but you need to know all these things about this person so that you can be consistent in how you're writing them and that they don't do things that are out of character. Like as an editor, when I'm very deep into a book, say like 10 out of 20 chapters halfway through, I can tell when a character is saying something that is out of character very, very easily. Like that's not what that person would say. Or it's kind of going off road, right? It's like you're derailing your theme here. Like, so you got to like think about your character, build your character first.
I think that is such a great thought. And also not only just so your character's consistent, but the world that you create is through the eyes of that, of whatever point of view you're in. Mm-hmm. And even if you're doing an omniscient point of view, you have an authorial voice that's also a character in the novel, even if it's kind of invisible behind. And so it's really important to have the character is the world, in that you're looking through whatever character you're in's eyes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one person who's very pessimistic is going to look at a rainbow and see it in a certain way. And somebody who's very optimistic is going to look at a rainbow and see it another way, you know?
Exactly. But it's still a rainbow, and it can be described technically in the same way if you're just plain describing what it looks like, right? But but there are different opinions and feelings about rainbows. Right. So another do that I think that I would say, and this is from my editor brain. Most of these are actually from my editor brain as opposed to my writer brain. My other do is I think that a lot of writers, especially like debut writers, they like to rush things that they're writing. And base most of their book on action, 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 jump to the next thing. And I tell them, like, action is good, but like jumping is confusing. So you want to like slow down your book to a degree. Like it's almost like find the perfect tempo. And that's part of building the world. Like different worlds will have different tempos. You know what I mean? If you're say a faster tempo, I associate with like space or, you know, futuristic sorts of plot and places. But then like medieval times, you would think that has like a bit of a slower pace. So you got to think of like, where are you building, how much action there needs to be, and your tempo in writing.
Yeah. And I think that some people think of world building, getting across setting, as being boring or not being part of the plot, but that's it's very important, because when I approach writing, if I'm going to write a scene that's a certain something, I feel it in my body, right? I think about what's around me and how it's affecting me. in my imaginary world. I mean, if you're going to write a fight, you have to feel what it feels like to be in a fight.
You should almost really like stand up and like fake fight something while you're trying to write this fight. Because like, and I mean, that sounds funny, but actually I think I'm kind of mostly being, you know,
not at all. Totally.
It's not funny in some ways, like pretend to fight something when you're trying to write about a fight, like, it makes it more real and more realistic, and like you want your world that you're building to be like tangible to the reader, right? Like these words are, they're not just words, they're images, and they're noises and smells, and like they're, you can turn them into senses if you're good enough at the writing. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And if you're writing grief, you have to feel the grief, what your body would feel like if you were in grief. If you're going to write sex, you have to feel what it feels, you know, you have to feel sexy, you know, you have to, and then your world around you. So all of that, whether it's an internal world building, a feeling in your body, or an external world building, that's all part of your plot. It's like the old Shakespeare play, you know, the Shakespeare plays where the thunder and lightning shakes when something dramatic is going on. I mean, that's basically what happens when you're writing things, is because you're projecting, the character's projecting feelings onto the world. And so you're not, like you said, explaining the whole world, you're explaining what they're noticing and how it affects them and their take on what is there, which is part of the whole plot and stuff. And along with that, I think a lot of people don't think you do research. You had mentioned that in the intro. Research is really important no matter what your genre is. I mean, it's really important in history, but it's all in really important in sci-fi, and that's where rabbit holes are wonderful. But it's also important, you know, if you're writing contemporary fiction or literary fiction, you have a lot that you can take for granted, especially if it's very based on yourself. But even so, research can be in the form of writing an author that you're reading an author that you're kind of inspired by or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Like, I think really any reading is research in some way, like, as long as, like, you know, what you're reading has some quality to it, right?
Yeah.
Because
I mean, you can even learn from stuff that you isn't quality though. Cause you learn you know,
yeah, you get to pick out like what is not very good writing then, right? And don't do that. Something else I was thinking about was, and this is more of a practical thing, when you're world building it. So I am not someone who can draw very well. So if I say I want to create this like fantasy world, I would have struggles with that because I can't draw. Like, I can see it in my brain and it's great in my brain, but once I get it out, it looks like stick people and it's terrible. It's absolutely horrendous. And then I get kind of, you know, sad at my lack of ability to draw, which doesn't actually, like, who cares? I mean, I can't be good at everything, right? But so my practical point is, actually, if you can pay like $100 or something to a illustrator online to kind of help flesh out the world that you're creating, right? Like, and if you're going to do that, then make sure that you actually have a real talk with that illustrator. Don't just be like, okay, I want to do a novel about a flying horse and go. It's like, yeah, no, like, you got to give them more than that if you want it to be like really realistic to what you're doing. Like, have a full-on conversation about your plot and your characters, who they are and what they're doing, and like, get a few illustrations, and like, I think that could really help you to describe what you're doing in that book better and set them up, and not only that,
go have a conversation. Like, if they don't do it exactly, it actually helps clarify in your own mind what you're trying to do, because sometimes it's not clear in your own mind. So you might get something back and you're like, wait a second, that's not right at all. That's what I told you, but that's actually not at all what I mean. And not only that, you can create it yourself, in that you can do even if you're not an artist, you can do like collages. You can be like, this is what the background might look like, and this is what the face might look like. I mean, I use images too, and there's a couple different ways I use images. One is, I didn't used to do this, but I heard of a young adult author who did, and I have done it ever since. I go out on the internet and I find an image of a person who looks like, usually just the face, but could be the whole body, of with the mood of the person that I'm creating. And I use that as inspiration. Plus, I draw all kinds of things. And a lot of them are not good drawings, but they're like, you know, a planet or a, you know, whatever. I do a lot of drawing. And that's actually why that kind of leads into another thing, which is keep notes on your research and on your ideas and stuff. And one, I realized just the other day for the first time that the reason I do it in a notebook is because I draw so much, because I can't, a lot of people keep them on, you know, they have their own little wikis, or they have a OneNote, or they have a Scrivener, or wherever they keep notes of their world building, as well as their plots and stuff like that. But I realize I do it on notebooks because I like to, I'll just like randomly go off and just start doing stuff where I'm associating stuff. So how do you keep track of your research and your ideas?
I'm more of a notebook person as well. Although I don't draw in my notebooks. That's not true. I do draw in my notebooks, but again, it's more like the drawing hinders me than anything.
I was going to say, terrible. Get the editor out it's of your head.
It's not good. Right, it's there. Not good. But I have a couple notebooks that one is for my writing projects, one's for my editing projects. I have too many notebooks, really, because I haven't been able to figure out how to do it in a good collective electronic way. Once I get my manuscript into Microsoft Word, I will then do little comments for myself. That's it. It's a simplified way, and I think I like it where it's just one spot. Yeah.
I actually have been trying a new electronic notebook called Remarkable. It's actually, I'll send you some information on it, but it's a notebook that you can't connect with the internet, can't connect on the internet with it. It's just trying to be electronic paper. That's all it's trying to be. And it does a really good job. I can draw on it. You can have all kinds of backgrounds, whether it's lines or engineering dots or, even musical notate, you know, musical staffs, all kinds of things like that. But you can also convert it to text, handwriting to text. So I'm finding it very handy. So thinking time, I think you have to forgive yourself for thinking time, because I think a lot of people think they're not working unless they're actually writing. And true, you can go overboard and just research forever and think forever. But you do have to allow yourself. I think sometimes my writer's blocks are because I haven't thought enough and done enough world building. How about you?
Yeah. I could totally see how that would, we rush into just plain writing and then it starts to get muddled because we aren't totally sure about what we're creating. Like in the past, I know that I've been bogged down by research. I often will try not to do writing that involves a ton of research, or else I know I won't do it. I've figured out what I need, what level of research I can handle. I would love to do historical fiction, but I can get it started, but eventually I will see all these inconsistencies that I know, okay, I've got to write a note to myself to fix that later and fix that later and fix that later. And then I just kind of get like lost, like, okay. So that's why I like sci-fi and futuristic sci-fi, because you can mostly just make it up as long as it sort of makes sense, right? Because nobody knows the future. So, I mean, that's great.
With historical fiction, you know, you live in fear of doing something historically inaccurate. But I took a workshop with Ron Hansen, who wrote The Assassination of Jesse James by that coward Robert Ford, as well as a bunch of other really great books. I think you'd like him. But anyway, one of the things he said is the past is another country. Even somebody in the past would not recognize the present, and somebody in the present wouldn't recognize the past. Even if you're writing about another culture in the past, like someone that's not your ancestry, even people who are present day from that culture would not recognize that past either. So you have a little bit of leeway. So I think you just have to like go on faith, do research. So a couple things here. One, there's research ahead of time, right? Where you're like trying to get the world enough. And some people just do no research and just jump in. And some people do so much research. In fact, Ron Hansen said he does so much research that he's starting to correct the people who are doing history. So he has it down. So I know, right? Now that's an impossible standard. But I think you have to find what works for you, because for me, it's a matter of, I do enough world building before I get started, research and world building when I get started, that I can get started. And then I get started. And then along the way, I'm always doing research. I let myself stop a day and do research on something I need to know. Then I come back and write, and then I go back and forth.
Yeah. And I think like, it's just figuring out your comfort level with, and if the research isn't, if it's just research and not a puzzle, then I think that's good. And that's fine. I know I've had a few books where I've written myself into little corners and I'm like, oh dear, now I've actually got like a problem to solve where it doesn't make sense if I don't solve this. Yeah. So research mid project is fine. If it's just plain, like, what should this robot look like? That's kind of fun, actually.
And sometimes it allows you to do thinking, right? That you're like, I need to make more pages. I need to make my page count for today. But sometimes you just need to stop and doodle and go down rabbit holes and let it kind of fester. I don't know, get real in your head, and then mm-hmm. you'll know where to go. You know, sometimes I just, before I go to bed at night, I'm like, I have this problem. I'll figure it out by the morning. And then I wake up and I'm like, ah, oh my God, that's the answer, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
In the right, make sure to balance info dumps with plot. People are all about, you know, explaining their world and they don't get much plot. And sometimes they're all about plot, like we were saying, and we don't get much world. So it's a mm-hmm. matter of balancing the two and kind of feeding them back and forth. And you can imply world without actually saying.
That is the science of writing. Like that's what, you know, someone is a good writer when they can combine two different things that they're trying to do in writing in the same sentence, right? Like, so someone's speaking, doing something, plus showing something about their personality or world or whatever. Like, that is just a magical sentence. That's right. What you should always be doing when you're writing.
Right. You should have like three different goals, even if they're sort of unconscious.
and that's like the subtle way of doing it, where like you don't even notice the writer. Right. That's the point. Today, even when I was editing, I was noticing, like you're saying, information dump about one character was saying something historically accurate about another character. And it's like, people don't speak like that. People don't just say, hi, wife, this is what this person believed. Yeah. And you say like five sentences, like, that's not conversational.
I think if you need to convey that information, I think you turn to the reader and you just say it. In other words, because that leads into a great example of somebody got a one of those awards where you do something really bad. A romance author.
Oh no,
had,
that's bad.
Yeah,
I didn't know there was such a thing. Oh no.
It was like it was from the Zoological Association or something, where a romance writer, had taken a scientific report about black-footed ferrets and put it in a romance novel. So she's got her romance heroine and her lover, who's a Native American man, and they're like getting all sexy. And then he turns and looks at her. Well, did you know that the black-footed ferret is 2.9 inch, you know, whatever.
Oh,
and
my
basically
goodness.
Took text directly from, that is so funny. Anyway, but what the point is that, if you need to convey that information, just write a paragraph about it. You know, don't put it in your character's mouth.
Or just write a blog
character.
About it. Write a blog.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
If it like, needs does it to even be need there. To be there? Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like,
it may not be need to be there, but if it does, is,
we could just, even do a podcast about how to judge if writing needs to be in your book or not. Yes. People are, I think they think they're good at it, but they're really not.
I think that's what they mean when they say kill your darlings, in that
yes,
it's not that you're attached to it. It's that you really think it needs to be in there when it doesn't need to be in there. Yeah.
No.
For sure.
No, no, no. I don't know if you've watched very many movies about this. This is a little bit off topic, but this is really, really interesting. So I was watching something on Netflix a while ago, a couple months ago now, but it made me think of this. It's some sort of new series on Sherlock's sister. I can't remember her name.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's really good. But so the funny part, I just thought like it's very unique and very done interestingly, where the characters speak to the camera sometimes in a sort of, they don't know this, but blah, 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 right? Like, and that's kind of what you're doing,
yes.
Right? So if, except that it's fine in the film world in some cases, not all films could handle doing that. It was just funny because of this particular, and I think it did work. But in a book, that's what you're doing when you're adding stuff that doesn't belong there. So you have your action, you have that action sandwich, and you're stopping your action, and the character is turning to you and saying something completely unrelated and then going back to the action, and it just messes it up. Don't stall what your scene is by unnecessary.
But you can come in as the authorial voice and say, hey, or not even say, hey, just be like, there's a point made in dialogue, and then you just have a paragraph about what that is, you know,
yeah.
But not five paragraphs.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. You right. could do that. Especially if it has an absolute yes. necessity to be there. Like it's connected. Yes. It's connected with your themes and your plot. And like, this is useful information.
Yes.
But I mean, if you're just talking about some toad, then I don't know. I just don't know.
So I had just one more thing. I actually don't have very many don'ts on my list, but I mostly do's because, you know, people, you know, if they can do it well, they could do the don'ts, you know, if they do it, but it's all a matter of pulling it off. And it's really hard to tell. I wanted to say that, so don't start with a huge world building info dump, unless sometimes people start that way. Like it's Dickensian, right? It's like Dickens, where you start with the history yes. of the parents and the, you know,
oh,
going
dear.
Way back. unless that's what you're trying for, you know, but sometimes when you start doing that, it's because that's actually what your story is. You know, you want to do this other story and you're starting the story and then you start writing the backstory and you're like, actually, this is really interesting, you know? So maybe that's actually the story you should be writing, not the story you're writing, you know?
Hey, that's kind of a don't, actually.
That is a don't. Good transition.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I would say as a don't is, okay, so when I was a teenager, I struggled to find ideas that were my own, absolutely 100% mine, and not just based on something else that I had changed. Almost all of mine originated from like saying, taking Lion King. Oh, that's a great story.
Fan fiction.
Right. Fan fiction. That's what it's called. Okay. But the problem was that I couldn't figure out how to just have an idea by myself, which thankfully I don't have that problem anymore, because I don't know how you continue writing if that's what you had. Like, anyway. So what I would say is, like, I am not a fan of fan fiction. I would prefer that writers just come up with their own stuff. Like, I know that sometimes that seems like, how can there be that many stories? What if you think of like the history of humanity and how many stories have been told, and then we're asking only to come up with unique stories still, but that is doable somehow. And that's like the magic of writing. Like, there are still stories that haven't been told, and it's just like, go and find one of those and tell it.
Oh my gosh. So the Nebula conference that I went to a week ago, it was great. Somebody was, can't remember which author it was that was talking. Anyway, she was saying, at a certain point, you start writing fan fiction of yourself, because you create this wonderful world with all these details and all this history and stuff like this. And you've written, you know, a number of books. And then pretty soon, you know, it's like you're writing your own fan fiction, because you're setting it in your own world, you know. And so I thought that was just such a great observation. And then also, God, I'm not going to remember the author's name, but he writes mystery series. He said, the unique thing that you have to offer the world is your viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And so you create a world that nobody else in the world can create. And so don't be afraid to create that world, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is not, whatever world you create is not like a lesser than a world that was created by somebody else. They did the same thing. They were basically true to themselves and created a world that they were interested in, that they thought was cool, that was, and you can, you know, it'll be uniquely your own, and that's what you have to offer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that like having security and confidence in your ability helps with that, where you're not feeling like you need to piggyback on other authors and just plain write what you like to read. I mean, that is generally what we end up doing anyway. As writers, we write what we want to read. I often challenge myself to not call myself a genre writer, in that I just, you know, I can challenge myself to write new weird things that are even outside of what I would want to read in some ways. Like, so right, I had another don't. What was my other don't? All right, okay. Don't only create characters that are like you. Don't base your characters only on yourself, because I mean, I think there's this kind of natural tendency to do that, that we kind of have to get away from. I know that the first few books, like I had at least one character in there that was absolutely me. And I think it's better if you have to base it on a real human, base it on somebody else that you know. Yes. And that's kind of fun. Like do that as opposed to putting yourself in there.
Right. And another thing I would say in relationship to that is, I believe that you can write characters of different backgrounds than yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe we have a duty to do that. I also believe we have a duty to do it as well as we can. It's a really good idea to do a bunch of reading and research about this, because it's really important, but because you have to be sensitive. You don't want to do stereotypes. And one of the ways that I approach it is, and this is part of world building, absolutely, because you want to people your world with, you know, people are part of your world, and you want to people the world with a bunch of different kinds of people, right? But when you're writing a character that is unlike yourself, whether it's of a minority person or a person of a different gender or whatever, at its basis, you're writing a person. So don't write an African-American. Don't write a person who happens to have these other things, right? Write a person who is male or trans or whatever. And then you can layer the other stuff on top of it. It'll probably be more authentic the closer the person is to you, but then it behooves you to do the research, to do that person authentic, but complicated. Because if you don't do it complicated, you're going to have a stereotype. And so that's where the research comes in.
I've heard from someone that like very few people actually fit one stereotype anyway. So base your character on that rule. As long as they're not in like one category, then you're probably okay. Like,
and if you base it on other people, you're making them complicated. Yeah, on other people, you know.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
As opposed to your idea of what it is.
Do we have any other don'ts?
I guess I framed all my don'ts as do's.
What about, what do you think about like realisticness? So for instance, you're doing like a sci-fi world. Do you, and I guess it has to do with research, like, do you concern yourself too much with making whatever's happening to be realistic? As in like, you're explaining how it is that they're arriving on this planet, like what technology is enabling, right? Blah, blah, blah. And like, is that sort of thing necessary in world building? Or would you say yes, no, and maybe?
This is a great transition to our last question, which is particular concerns about world building related to genre, because I think it matters what you want to do and what your genre is, how realistic it is, because historical fiction tends to want to be really realistic, but you don't want to be realistic totally. For instance, if you actually mirrored the conversational style, I mean, first of all, we don't know what the conversational style of someone in the 1880s is technically, because we don't have, you know, unless we have, and even recordings are false. You can go off the dialogue that is in writing, and that's going to be false too, but you can make it realistic, but you don't want to make it as realistic as the way it's portrayed in things at the time, or it comes across as stilted and like really off-putting. And so you have to like balance what you read, you have to put enough flavor in that it feels like it's realistic without it actually being realistic. So it's like,
yeah, because it has to be relatable. If people don't understand what they're reading, then they don't care.
Exactly. Right? And if they don't read your book, then what's the point?
Yeah. No. So having that balance between realistic and relatable, that's the magic.
Yeah. And also it depends on what you want to do, because in sci-fi, you have people who are hard sci-fi who want everything to be absolutely scientifically based. But if you go too far, I mean, it takes a long time to travel across space. And if you went across space, you just would have no plot, basically.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're concerned with, Becky Chambers is very much concerned about social interactions. If you're concerned about that, the science behind it, you kind of want to get it kind of good, but you're not concerned with that. You're concerned about, what it's like to be in a relationship with an alien,
Right. So I think of for sci-fi, there's two different spectrums. There's The Martian.
Yeah.
We're talking films now, The Martian, which if you look up the realisticness of it, it's very interesting. Versus Interstellar, which you're half of this is fantasy, but I enjoyed both of them. Right. Where because they have different things that they're focusing on. So Interstellar was more focusing on the drama and the emotion and the relationship and how the events are affecting the characters, as opposed to the science of how did he get in this random floaty cube world? I have no idea, right? And it doesn't really bother you that much because of the acting and the story between the father and the daughter. That just, every time I see that, it just rips me apart, because I'm a parent. So I don't care about the science, because the focus in that movie is about the relationships, as opposed to The Martian. They use the science and the will to live as themes. Those are the major themes. I mean, there's still emotion, but he presents emotion and then he presents, bam, we've got to solve this. So we solve it. That's kind of the cycle.
I think you, at the beginning of the book, you signal to your readers what it's about, this is what you should be concerned about, science or realism or relationships, and then it's whether you fulfill the promise that you set out at the beginning of the book.
So it's author led.
Yeah. And genre led.
And genre led.
I mean, because in romance, you need to have a happy ending. I mean, that's one of the points. That's why people read romances, because they want happy endings. They want it to be about relationships. I mean, I think romance gets a short shrift sometimes, but if you've read Pride and Prejudice, and I read it a number of times because I was writing a book based on it, it is a master of plotting and a master. I mean, it is an amazing book when you really start to analyze it. And romance, just like in any genre, you have romance authors who are just churning stuff out, and their concerns are, maybe not the quality as much about quality as about plot and things. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know what their concerns are.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have a master's of literature.
They do not have a master's of literature. And then again, people with master's of literature who tried to write actual fiction would come across as stilted and. I mean, writing is just, but I mean, there are absolutely, romance as a genre has good writers and bad writers, just as every genre does.
Right. So we're deciding that really, if we think about it, writing doesn't have a set of rules. That's why it's kind of tricky. Like you said earlier, if you're good enough at writing and building these worlds, you can break the rules.
You can get away with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. You just have to be very clever and understand writing and story and plot and people and characters and emotion. You have to understand all that stuff, or else it's not going to work.
Right. And, all genres have world building, even literary fiction. Like we mentioned, I think that's really important. It's a good idea if you like hard science fiction you have to like research if you like hard science fiction, because you cannot be an expert in all the things that you need to be an expert in.
Right. And then another thing to to just have like another bullet there is if you're doing hard science fiction, you have to be able to explain what it is that you're researching. So that's why I could not do hard science fiction because I am not a science person. It's like, it's actually, that's the thing with like writers and actors. They're very similar types of creatives. So writers and actors both have to kind of fake knowing stuff all the time. You have to figure out how to horseback ride and be really good at it to the point where it looks like you're a natural when you actually have never been on a horse, right? Like things like that, that comes up with for writers too. So you have to figure out like, how comfortable are you with faking it? And if you're not like me, I just, even if I read science, like hard science, it would just like, I wouldn't get it. I just don't get science. I don't understand it. So I couldn't explain it if I don't understand it. So there are ways to go around your weaknesses in genres. So figure those things out.
And figure those things out, but also know your strengths. It's really important to play to your strengths. I mean, try to mask your weaknesses, but also play to your strengths and know what those are and embrace them, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't be falsely humble. Just, you know, lean fully into it, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Remember what you're good at. And I mean, what's that saying? Isn't there a saying like stick with what you're good at?
Write what you know.
Write what you know. That's what it is.
But
yes.
The thing is, you know a lot more than you think you do, in that we can fake a lot of things that we don't know. And a lot of times what we think, so there'll be a subject and we'll think we need to know this part of it when it's really this part. Like science fiction, you can write science fiction about relationships, right? So you don't actually need to know the science very much, hardly at all. You can fake that part, but it's about relationships. So you can make it be what you want it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's probably a good note to end on.
Yeah.
Write to your strengths. You can do
write
it.
Write to your strengths.
Write to your strengths. But also, do you want to introduce our new...
So that's the end of our podcast for this week, but we do have an exciting announcement. We're going to be introducing some extra content. We're going to call it 1001 Lives. So if you'd like to subscribe to our content, we are going to be putting a fee onto that. We haven't exactly decided how much at this point, but do stay tuned. Take a look at our website, www.1000liveslive.com. and our podcast site. Those are both on our Twitter account as well, at 1000lived.
We may, if we get really brave, create a world off the cuff as
yes,
we're going.
Yes, off the cuff. So in that, we'll actually have maybe some steps for you that would be helpful. So yes, be sure to subscribe to that. You don't want to miss that. That does sound fun. There will be additional sort of writing puzzles like that in this extra content that we're presenting. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.